Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of The Carvery with Alex Storr. So excited that you guys have jumped into this episode. Again, this is the podcast where we believe that success, happiness, innovation, collaboration, teamwork, creativity, all the things you really desire in your life or as a leader, we believe it's your natural state and your team's natural state once the drama's gone. And so through my keynote speeches, trainings, and just linking together content for you guys, I try and give practical ways for you guys to take any of the drama you're feeling in your life or with your teams and give you some of our techniques to reduce that drama, to chip it away. And again, what's left is all that we desire. So on this podcast, we're not trying to add anything extra into your life. We all have so much that people are trying to add in. We just help carve away some of the waste or the inefficiencies that we're currently doing. And it really sets us up for a lot more joy each day and success. And so that's what we have planned again in this episode. But to lead into this episode, I actually have to tell a little bit of a story to lead into the three points I want to cover today in the topic. Because this idea or this whole concept came up again enough that I wanted to then cover it in today's episode. When I was in San Antonio, I believe it was a week ago, working with a client and a group of amazing leaders that are looking at just starting out with our work in the core of how to lead drama-free teams. And so I was on the first slide, and we had really introduced the cost of drama at work to open their minds a little bit, that it was 2.5 hours a day per person. So if you're new and jumping into this episode, this is your first episode on The Carvery, our research in our third book actually found that the average person spends about 2.5 hours per day in drama. And when you think about per person on a team and how that relates to results, but beyond results, people's joy, people's engagement, people enjoying their jobs, it's a huge opportunity. And so we had introduced that in the first few slides. Then I went into one of our main models, which is where we introduced the human condition and how stress really happens in our organization and where our minds go when we fall kind of victim to our human condition when we're stressed. And it's one of the most powerful slides to really tee up the entire day. And I just want to review that model and then where we got into this discussion of today's topic. And so in this model, we just introduced that all leaders we talk to across the country, or even all employees, they draw a couple trend lines on the board when we ask them what's going on. And those trend lines are really symbolic of what they're feeling each day in their jobs. They're steep, they're scary, and they're usually crashing in the wrong direction. So there's like a line going up that is aggressive agendas. It's more change. It's more responsibilities. It's more disruption from customers. It's more competition. It's increasing costs of goods sold. It's increasing technology that they need to learn. At the same time, there's less time, less resources going down. There's less communication. There's less engagement, less morale, and competing priorities. And when those two trend lines are in danger of crossing and the going gets tough and we're asked to do more with less, every human being, every single one of us, fantasizes about one thing and one thing only, and that's quitting. Now, Gallup tells us that 70% of the American workforce quits their jobs every single day. Now, the problem with that is they keep coming to work and collecting a paycheck because they've quit mentally in their minds. And so your mission might be to change the world and impact communities everywhere for greater health and wealth and prosperity. And their mission statement becomes just survive this thing, just get through the day. And so instead of people really stepping up in these moments, they choose to step down. And this is where disengagement comes. Now, we always like to introduce at this point, just to interrupt people's thinking gently, is that have you ever thought about that engagement, which is workplace happiness, is a choice? Like, an example I'd like to give as a speaker is I didn't know if they would laugh at any of my jokes. I didn't know if the audience would say hi to me when I came in or talk to me before the speech, or I didn't know if I could trust them, or I didn't know if anyone would even show up, but I still chose to engage for the audience. It seems as if engagement is always my choice. But what happens is people choose to step down instead of step up. And when we step down and choose the route of disengagement, we step out of the two things, in my experience, that humans crave the most, which is connection and impact. And the moment you choose to disengage and blame your circumstances, you actually leave both of those things unavailable to you, which is to have an impact and connect with others because you're disengaged. Now, the result of this is it doesn't feel very good in our human condition to be disengaged. So what we have to do is come up with reasons, stories, and excuses to justify why we are disengaged. And what we call this is BMW driving, which is bitching, moaning, and whining. And you guys know about BMW driving. This comes out in the form of venting. This comes out in the form of blaming the circumstances. It comes out in the form of us versus them. So it's us versus the organization or it's corporate that's making us do all of this. And this is the behavior that comes out, and we just call it BMW driving. Now, people don't like driving their BMW themselves. They get with others. And many of you know that misery loves company. And so those that are disengaged get with others that are also disengaged, and they collude and they come up with a list of what we call terroristic demands of all the things that would need to change in their reality for them to be okay or for them to even give the gift of their work on a daily basis. And this is really interesting because this often comes out on our engagement survey in the form of comments where we call them basically, you know, kill the leader Monday morning meetings, where a leader walks in, they're ready to have a great week. And all of a sudden, one of their team members, oftentimes a team member that's been elected the leader, or someone that's cool with them, the boss, they say, we've all been talking and this isn't what I think, but this is what they all think. And I just thought I should let you know, because everyone's a little scared to come to you and tell you the truth. And they say, you know, we're all in to do whatever it takes to deliver on what our customers need or what the business needs or what our patients need, as long as you pay us more money, we get better benefits, there's more transparency, you communicate the why statement, you slow change down if it gets to be too much, if we can have better technology and better IT support and no manual workarounds and no hypocrisy, and people get promoted when they actually do the work, and there is, we can have a best friend network and a second best friend network, and our opinion can count on every major decision, and you will consult us if we're moving too fast, and a jeans day and a pizza day. And if you as an organization or as a leader can fix that entire list for all of us, then we'll step up. Now, what happens is the average organization or the average leader grabs that list and they really in their hearts care about their teams, but they don't realize what they're creating when they grab that list and run out and try and fix the list. Because as we get promoted in our organizations, many of us are doers, we're executors, and we don't realize the moment we become a leader, we do less doing and more facilitating of better thinking and good mental processes. In this moment where we are colluding and we're looking for a different reality is a sign of a poor mental process that we've just grabbed, and now we're going to try and fix reality. And the question I always ask the group, and I ask this audience here, was what are the odds in the short term you can fix that list for every single person on your team? And everyone just gets a little silent because they realize it's zero. Now, what happens is we can't fix the list. We come back and say, guys, there's just some things we can't do. And the team then gets more gas for their BMWs. They go, we told you what we needed and we went to you as leaders and you didn't do everything. And you didn't count our opinion, so that leads to more justification for quitting because it seems like you don't care. And this perpetuates a vicious cycle of disengagement and justification about why it was okay to step down. And this model is really powerful because when people start to cite their circumstances as the reasons they can't succeed, and they give you the list of terroristic demands of what needs to change in their reality, it's our jobs as an organization to help people start to realize that their circumstances are not the reasons they can't succeed. They're simply the reality in which we must succeed. And so this is where we put in another data point about what if it wasn't about changing reality or creating a perfect reality for our teams? What if as leaders, it was our jobs to change people's mindsets, to grow their skill set, to be successful in any reality that comes their way, especially the current reality they're in. And in this session, I gave that model and I said, and here's where we struggle with engagement, because we have people that step down and they BMW drive, oftentimes in the form of comments on a survey, if they're really in this low mindset. Then they tell us all the things that they would need change for them to step up. And we do a lot of listening, which is great, but we don't know if it's a credible witness about what's going on. And the one thing I said in this session was that list is different for everyone depending on their mindset. So a high accountable will have a different list for what they need to do their jobs better than a low accountable. And we're going to talk a bunch about this, because the topic today is all around why we actually have to differentiate at work when it comes to mindset and when it comes to especially research on personal accountability. And one myth that's out there, or one thing that leaders seem to be really uncomfortable with, is differentiating. And oftentimes it's because we try and differentiate on performance, but that's a skewed metric. And we get a little nervous if we differentiate, could it be, you know, an HR issue, or could it be a conscious or unconscious bias? And what I want to hopefully introduce to all of you guys today is that with this content I'm teaching you guys, gives you a way to differentiate for the right reasons, which is on low drama, research-based, evidence-based principles around personal accountability, around questioning our thinking, around being good at change. All of these things we talk about in our philosophy are ways that we actually must differentiate, or we're gonna create a mess in the workplace. And so I tee that all up because we as leaders get on this never-ending quest to perfect and change reality for the people. And then once we try it, or we get close to doing it, you're surprised every time that you come back and it says, now how are we doing? Are you guys happy? Are you guys able to get results now? We've just helped perfect this reality. And they say, you know what? Funny you ask. Here's another list of what we need. We thought that was it, but now we need more. And it's been this cycle that we haven't been able to crack. And in saying that, this brings up the comment that came from an attendee, because they got really nervous that we were differentiating. And they're like, you know, a few of the comments that he brought up were, if you're coming in as a leader with some preconceived notions about people's mindsets, or if you're already judging and separating out people's responses, we're going to get away from active listening and getting everyone's dialogue involved in the conversation. And that is something we definitely want to think about, but none of what's going into that model is talking about that. What it's trying to introduce is, yes, we want dialogue. We love robust dialogue. And yes, we want to hear what everybody wants in a great workplace, but we want to make sure we have a few filters to make sure that we're not listening to people in a victim mindset and people that are seeing the world through the lens of their ego, who are really into drama each day and then trying to give us how we can change reality so there's less drama for them to deal with their skill set. And so what we work on more is skill sets, and giving you guys techniques to up people's skill set so they can be immune to the typical drama at work. What we see out there is many businesses are trying to stop all the drama at work from coming, and it just shows up in different flavors, and they never work on people's skill set and approach and willingness to deal with it. And that's what we're going to look at here with some ways to differentiate. And so the first point here is the most important point. So I'm going to start with most important, even though they're all important, but we're going to definitely hit this one. The key with those lists is that the same workplace environment can't please a high accountable and a low accountable at the same time. As an organization or as leaders, we will always be upsetting one of those groups. It's our job to make sure we're upsetting the right people. And when we look at this situation, if we're always listening to what can we change in our workplace for everyone, you got to know that you'll have a range of people from really low in accountability to your high accountables. Now, this isn't performance. This is based on accountability levels, which I can link some other podcasts that dive deeper into what creates a high accountable mindset. That'll be linked in the description. But the list will be different for those two groups. And so this point that I made that the attendee was a little concerned about was less a point about trying to purposely as leaders upset people. In the ideal, we'd upset nobody because we'd set standards really high. And then we'd hold people and coach people to a high state of accountability. So everyone would be happy in that environment. That's what our businesses promise people is we're committed to excellence. And then as you work there, if we're committed to excellence, then we're committed to calling you to greatness to be able to deliver excellence for our customers, for our clients, for our patients. So that's how it should work. And there's no reason to tick anybody off if we all step up to a mindset of high accountability. Now, what's the problem? Some people are not able to do that or don't choose to do that. I wouldn't say not able. They don't choose to do that through our facilitation, through our coaching. And so that point was a subtle shift. It wasn't about, hey, we're going to just differentiate and we're going to tick people off. It's about, no, we're going to lead in a way that activates high accountables and it rewards that behavior. And that type of leadership is not going to please a low accountable, usually in a victim mindset. So that's where it's more about that spectrum there. And so what are some key things to think about in the difference with a high accountable and a low accountable mindset? And why might they not like the same environment? Let me give you a quick example. First of all, high accountables and low accountables, they sort differently when they're in pain in their organization or in their day-to-day. So if a high accountable's in pain, they're looking at their job and they're feeling that they're suffering. They go, dang, I'm suffering. So they notice that awareness. And then they take some time to reflect. They go, what's my part in this mess? So they do some reflection on what can they improve in their skill set, their approach, or their willingness in this mess to take a different look at it more skillfully. So they would reflect on that, come up with their part they could improve on. And then anything left over, they say the organization could definitely help with this. So there's some filtering and some sorting going on about what's my part and then what's the organization's part that they could help with. And it's shared accountability for the environment we want to create. That's how a high accountable sorts. Here's how a low accountable sorts that information. And it usually comes out on a survey. A low accountable, usually in a victim mindset, says, I'm suffering. And then they immediately take that suffering as the organization's problem. So they need to reduce our workload. They need to redesign our jobs. They need to make the processes better. They need to, and there is a responsibility for the organization to do that, but in shared accountability with a high state of accountability mindset. And so a low accountable will feel that pain and immediately, without reflection, blame it on the organization. And what's important about this? We actually have a survey tool we use where we give these questions that would be like listening to your staff on what's their environment like and are they engaged or not. We get those same comments back, but through our tool, we're able to filter based on accountability levels. We've been doing this for years. We have a lot of data on this. And so what happens is you get the feedback back, like you're listening to your organization about what we should change in the workplace normally, like a normal survey. But then we have a secondary survey. It's like a magic wand to see what the high accountables, mid accountables, and low accountables want in the workplace. And so it adds a filter based on accountability levels. And so this is based on our research on accountability found with the foundation being in locus of control from psychology. And so you get this filter that filters based on mindset, what those comments are. So it buckets the comments in high, medium, or low in accountability, how people would rate out with these questions we add in there. And so what you can do with our survey is take those responses and turn up the volume of your highest accountables to see what they'd like differently in the workplace. And then you can really start to turn down the volume of your most victim mindsets, because a lot of time it's just venting in the form of comments on a survey. And then you get very different information. And what's really important about this is over all the years we've done this, most organizations, and I would say you could bring this into the world, they skew towards low accountability. So we're overrepresented in our organizations with low accountables and very like low to mid accountables. We have not as many high accountables as we think. So we're listening, if we then listen to everyone's feedback on what we should do differently in the workplace, we're actually listening to an overrepresented group that are in a victim mindset. And so when we go to action plan and spend dollars and make efforts to improve our workplace based on this information from low accountables, what you'll find out if you've been doing this or when you think about it is you can't please a low accountable. They have to first raise their mindset to then see what's their part in things. And so what you'll do is you'll go fix all these circumstances and then you'll still have the same problem. And a lot of us intuitively know this. We just don't know how to differentiate. And we have found the holy grail is these accountability metrics. And the big part to realize here is low accountability is usually very well correlated to a victim mindset. And there's so much research out there that has proven that thinking like a victim will never lead to results or happiness. It is very, you know, direct correlation between the more victim mindset we're in, the more we don't think we can have an impact, the more easy it is for us to disengage. And so if we're listening to that group, you see where this mess is created. And I want to give you guys a quick story about to the extreme of what happens here in an organization. We were working with this group that had been really spending a lot of time listening to all of their teams at all levels, which is a great idea. And they were getting feedback on what they needed to change in the workplace to improve the environment, to increase culture, to make it a better place to work so they could do great work for those they're trying to serve. And one of the themes that came back in the workplace was because they sat a lot during the day, the chairs they had were really outdated. And one way that they could increase engagement and get results would be to invest in their people to get some nicer chairs. And so what they did is through the survey, that was one of their big action steps. And this was a humongous company. And so they put a team together to do a whole bunch of research. They looked at like the ergonomics of chairs and lumbar support and went through all of these examples and really went out and shopped vendors. And they came up with some chair ideas, and eventually they invested and they spent like millions of dollars to get new chairs for everyone, because you couldn't just buy for some groups, you had to buy for everyone if you were going to do this. And they got all the chairs, and these were just amazing chairs. And what ended up happening is shortly after everyone got the chairs, they started to get feedback on the chairs. Some loved them, some were like, not sure why we did that, but thank you for the chair. And then others came around, a small group, they had found a article or something that said, I read somewhere that these chairs are either refurbished or they're built by those that had been incarcerated. And it's part of this initiative they do. So we have like basically slave labor that made these chairs. So you guys actually didn't invest in really nice chairs for us. You did this kind of discount nonprofit thing to get these chairs. And so now they're upset that the way the chairs were built wasn't what they thought was ethical or something like that. And so what happened is then there was this big uproar about how the chairs were built, and they weren't excited about the chairs. And so they had to go back and figure out how to please this group. And what was so funny is I don't even know, you guys, if we would have to do our survey with this group for you guys to guess what level of accountability that group probably was if you tested this. And I'll let that sit for a second. But if you look at the whole organization strategy, this was a big company, and what they're trying to do for the potential of their customers, and we have a big focus for hours at a time of how upset people are with the chairs they sit in. And I'm not saying don't get nice chairs. I'm just saying, let's think about, are the high accountables wanting new chairs, or are we tailoring to low accountables? Because this will spread across every single thing you try and do in your organization, and it gets us all off the prize and what we're actually there for, which is to serve our customers and really deliver on the potential of the organization. And so I wanted to tell you guys that story because it was millions of dollars wasted. The chairs were comfy, but this potential story, which I don't even know if it's validated, had spread like wildfire, and it was enough to tick off this select group of low accountables, I would guess, about why they now were upset about the organization, the way they bought the chairs or all of that. So I want you guys thinking about this filter, differentiating based on accountability levels. And another thing that was brought up, the second point, what was really valid from this attendee, I'm so glad they spoke up and we got talking about this, is they're like, I don't think you should come in with preconceived notions as you're asking people what's going on or what can we improve around here, because as we're judging from the start, we're going to try and negate what someone says and someone else's is better based on your preconceived notions. And what we hadn't had time to get into yet is, you guys know our stuff. The biggest tenet of reality-based thinking and leadership and all the stuff I preach is, as much as you can, stop judging and start helping. And so this goes so against what we hadn't got into yet, which is, like, we believe coming in with like an open mind is better than ever. And so we don't want any preconceived notions that because I see this person, I then label them as a low accountable and from one thing they said, and then I don't listen to them, or I have my favorites and I say, because I like you, you're high accountable, I'll listen to you on what we should do. This is trying to get away from all of that. It is trying to use some research-based principles around accountability to have a better metric to listen to the input that will help our organization. And so we're actually getting as far away from that as we can. And essentially, if you are thinking about the potential of the organization and not always your personal preference, like what's easiest for you, and you're bringing up what might be best for those we serve, that would be good dialogue. If you are understanding that your input's needed for how we could, not why we can't, how we could input with the risks you see ahead and how we could mitigate them with your expertise, that's amazing input. That is what we want. And so this judgment piece, the judgment we would have is, we want all of our leaders, as we're actively listening to our teams and what we can do differently around here, we want it to not be where they're venting about what's going on, but in a professional way, giving us, here's something we'd like to work on, and here are some ideas we have to mitigate the risk. Can we just filter where the energy's going? I'm such a proponent of noticing the energy. So if someone's in ego or low self, it's going to come out really aggressive. It'll come out really maybe sarcastic. It'll come out really like they don't have a part in it, or there's nothing they could do to impact. That information, I would start to notice this could be someone that needs to get reflecting, and there might be in a low self victim mindset. Could we flip them up to high self about, you know, what's your part in the mess? What's one thing you'd be willing to do to help with better communication? The more reflection in there about how we could takes out the judgment and ensures that the dialogue we get is differentiated for helping to move us forward, not to stop the action or blast the organization. And so that was another point that came up, that is like, if we start to do this, are we going to have people coming in with preconceived notions about who's a high accountable, who isn't? And the beauty about accountability is most people land in their spot, like what they're used to. So if someone's been in a low state of accountability for most of their life, they're used to being there. And so what's the beauty about it is anyone can get more reflective and work on living in a mindset of a high state of accountability through coaching and through calls to greatness. It's open to everyone. But the challenge is most people get pretty set in their ways, and people can shift, but they usually have their favorite camps when it comes to that. And most people either live most times in a high state of accountability with a few times they fall off the bus, or they live in a low state of accountability and really can't jump into mid or high. And so that's where none of this is judgment. It's really trying to add a filter and add some clarity around this differentiation. And so hopefully that's helpful as well. Now, the last point, number three, on why differentiating for the right reasons is so powerful. And what I want to add is a key point that when we differentiate with our leadership content, we always make a disclaimer that we would never differentiate or play favorites based on where you went to school, the lifestyle choices you make, who you choose to believe in, the color of your skin. Like, we need all the diversity we can get, because a lot of us are serving diverse populations, or we work with diverse groups. We need all that diversity. But what we do actually play favorites on are some very research-based, low-drama principles. Are you personally accountable? Are you someone that buys in early and often and talks about how we could? Are you resilient? Do you edit your stories and watch where the stories cause your suffering? Are you aligned to your organization? Do you know your role? And are you good at change? If you're looking at differentiating those four or five main principles from our low drama content is the way to differentiate. And so using our tools, you can always call people up to that. And then if they're like, I want to be a favorite, it's open to everyone. All you got to do is help us in these ways and focus on these things and you'll be a favorite. And so that differentiation is so important for your teams because it gives you something to actually differentiate on that's research-based, that is has some work behind it and has some evidence behind it. And the key with all of that is as you teach people low drama competencies, they get happier. They understand there are places where they're empowered to make a difference. So they have more impact. And the main holy grail of this, the first one, a high state of accountability. High accountables tend to get better results because they can see their part in things and then find ways to impact it differently next time. And they also are happier. The biggest correlation to your happiness is your level of personal accountability you take for your circumstances. And so high accountables, this mindset, when we start to think about everyone is on the spectrum of accountability level, high accountables usually get the results we're looking for, and they're usually happier. And what are we looking for in our organizations? Results from our teams, and we want them to be engaged and enjoying their work. And when you start to differentiate based on accountability levels, high accountables are attracted to other high accountable atmospheres. So you become the magnet for other high accountables in the area to work with you. But low accountables also attract low accountables. And if you mix, it really is weird for a group of high accountables to all of a sudden have a low accountable in there. It frustrates them. So you got to work on them not judging and getting righteous. It's them helping and trying to call that person up. That's a big opportunity. Or if you put a high accountable with all resistors, it just is where they make a choice to go somewhere else with all of those in a low state of accountability. And so this difference is so important. And some of our research behind this, just to keep you guys thinking, is early on we created a word map. And high accountables use the word choice 7 times more often. Like, I chose to not follow up with that. I chose to not attend that meeting that I should have, or I chose to disengage instead of engage in that moment. So they use the word choice often so they can see their part in things. And this is important because one of my favorite examples, 2 people come to work and they show up late. This is the example. And so if you ask a low accountable, why were you late? Their response will be, well, there's too much traffic. And with that traffic, I couldn't make it on time. And so they really blame something external. They go, because of traffic, I couldn't make it. Now, if you ask a high accountable to let you know why they weren't late, it sounds more like this. You know, I chose to not check my Waze app before I got in the shower, and I just blindly jumped in the shower without looking at traffic. And because I took that extra 15 minutes to get a shower in without looking, I, because of my choices, ended up showing up late because I didn't see the accident that had already happened. And so this is important because those are 2 different responses, same person or organization. They both could be a high performer. Now, why is this important? Let's say the next day I have to have them on time for a big meeting. And I go to each person. I go, I need you here on time tomorrow. Can I count on you? Person A, the low accountable, says, well, it depends. It depends on the traffic. And if the traffic isn't perfect, then they might not be on time. And if you ask the high accountable, hey, can you be here on time? Their response will be absolutely. Because what they'll do is they saw their part in it. What they'll do next time is adjust their behavior, check the app, and leave earlier. They will shower the night before. They will make sure their clothes are laid out. They will take a bunch of steps to ensure that they're there on time. And so one person you can always rely on to get the results you're looking for and to know that they can always have an impact in the situation. And the other one, it's always at the mercy of their circumstances. And this is key because this two mindsets in this simple example exist in our workplace scattered across. And one, you're going to be tailoring how you change your workplace or how you invest in your workplace off that first mindset, where they're always at the mercy of their circumstances. And so you can try and perfect circumstances and do all of that. But the better investment would be, one, to reward and invest in your high accountables, or try and boost the accountability level of those that are a little bit lower in this. In bringing this into the business, you see this mindset come out so often when it comes to change in our organization. When you roll out a new initiative, or you let people know about what's required next based on new regulations or where the new strategic plan is going, based on how you're seeing the world through what lens and how distorted the view is based on your ego and your judgment, if you're not in a high state of accountability, you don't experience your part in that change the same if you're a high accountable and a low accountable. And going further into change, here's some differences between high and low accountables to keep thinking about. High accountables get nervous when change isn't happening in your organization. Now, why is that? Because they know that the world's always changing, that our customers are always asking for changing requirements, that laws are changing, that the market's changing. So if our business isn't changing and adjusting to that, then they're going to get really anxious that we're not keeping up. Now, on the other side, low accountables get nervous when change is happening. And so they hear about a new change, they're chronically shocked by it. They go through surprise, panic, and blame that it's happening again. And they want everything to stay the same while the market goes this way. And that is a big difference in how you're going to roll out change in your organization. Many organizations, instead of rewarding that high accountable group and helping them not get so anxious, we notice the ones that are anxious that are in a low state of accountability. And we try and slow the change down, or we try and re-explain it again, or we try and roll it out again, or make it more consumable. And what we do is make the other group really anxious of high accountables that usually give us the results and choose to engage. And so that lack of differentiation really gets us talking out of both sides of our mouth when it comes to change in our organizations. Another few points from our research that we found in this differentiation that we want you guys to keep thinking about. Number one thing that high accountables ask for, if you can't pay them more, usually, is one thing only: differentiation. They want us to set high standards because that's what our customers are asking for. And then they want us to take care of low accountables or low performers, or at least be clear with them about what needs to be delivered and make sure it's very transparent about how we're doing. And that's what they ask for. Now, number one thing low accountables usually ask for: fairness, or for everyone to be treated the same. And it's not fairness like the fairness you think about, like ethically, morally. It's like a way to use it as emotional blackmail that we are all like set to really low standards. And that is a big difference there. I think that's where I want to leave it for today, you guys. And I hope this got us really thinking about the real reason why we actually have to differentiate at work. And so if you've ever heard that you can't play favorites or you shouldn't play favorites and we got to keep everything the same here and we got to treat everyone the same, I want you guys to start questioning that, and not with motive, not being judgmental, but where have we taken differentiation out of the workplace, and where can we get back to some of the science and what we know about the brain and psychology, and especially our research behind personal accountability, because this can be a great way in which you differentiate and reward differently that actually leads to results and higher levels of engagement over time. And so this podcast, I hope, gives you guys some great ideas to run with on differentiation. And I'd love to keep the conversation going. At Alex M. Doerr is the place. So if you guys aren't following yet on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, those are my favorite places to just have more dialogue. And I'd love to hear what you guys thought of this. Thank you so much for listening. If you haven't told anybody else about this podcast on your teams or in your network, let them know that the Carvery is your place to keep ditching the drama. And I hope you guys are feeling better out there and doing amazing work with those that you get to interact with. And so thank you guys for always being really supportive of the work I'm doing. Been having a lot of fun out on the road speaking, bringing it back to you guys, and just talking with you guys on the interwebs. And have a great week. Can't wait for the next one. And as always, you guys know the deal. Let's keep ditching the drama.